Blog Talk Radio.
Mark Rawson, and I'm broadcasting from Spiritual Connections Radio. I'd like to welcome you to another Thursday night show. As you know, me and Pam are on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you miss in, hey Pam, and if you miss any part of this show, you can pick it up in replay. And to find out more about this show and other shows that are on, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And you heard Pam saying hello. Hey, Pam, it's great to have you on.
Hi, Mark. It's nice to be here, as always, every Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you hearing any wind on the backside? How much noise are we getting on this end?
I don't hear a lot of wind.
Oh, good, good. I got the headset on. As you know, I'm out at the house, and out at the house here, we're having one of those windy time periods where the temperature actually dropped a little bit, and the wind is blowing like crazy. And, of course, it's a beautiful full moon tonight. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to you.
Well, thanks. You know that wind. Mark is staying in my house in the south of France, and that wind is called the Mistral. And the Mistral is a wind that is supposed to come down through a natural sort of topography corridor down into the south of France. And the interesting thing about this wind is it lasts 3 days, 6 days, or 9 days. And it's said, legend has it, that it used to make people insane. It'll take your car door off. It'll take your car door off. It's really strong stuff.
Yeah, it's. I think one of the first things I noticed when I got here is that, you know, just like in the United States, there's certain ways that houses look. And in the United States, you know, people have like those fake shutter look things on the left and right hand side of the windows. Well, when you actually come here to France, they actually have wooden shutters on the outside. Matter of fact, on the doorways even, that you actually have to open before you can even get to the doors or the windows. And I thought that was really neat. And I was like, well, I don't know why they would have anything like this. And then when the first wind came in, I was like, oh, okay.
Now you know. Yeah, now you know. It's that wind is tough. Anyway. Let's talk about tonight's show because it promises to be a very interesting one. Tonight we have a woman that looks like she has done just about everything under the sun when it comes to spirituality and creativity. And I can't wait to hear her story. Her name is Luzmila Mikol, and she is the founder and principal of Mikol and Clan, which I believe is a clothing design firm. Luzmila, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did I get it right?
Yes. Yeah, you did. You got it right.
Good. Okay, well, I can't wait to find out about this interesting life that you've had. So tell me about what you're doing now, first of all, so we know who we're talking to.
Oh, right now I'm launching beginning to launch my brand. So I work with sustainable and eco fabrics, and I also work with ethical production. So for me, it's like from the minute I create a design to the end where it's created, there's a consciousness that goes into the process. So I'm very conscious about the kind of fabrics I'm using and how that's impacting the environment and how it's impacting when people wear it. So my catch line is always wear your world. So people, clothing is such a, I mean, we need clothing. We have to wear clothing. So I'm just beginning to launch it. I've got my website up, and I'm just waiting for word back from Project Runway. So I'm kind of in that initial stage of moving forward. So it's really exciting, and to just be in this realm of fashion where it really is this consciousness, and it's becoming more and more mainstream, I guess is a word. You'll even see in Walmart, like Walmart now even has like organic T-shirts or something, though not made ethically. It's like starting to become mainstream. More people getting conscious about the clothing that they're wearing and where it comes from, and who's made it. So I feel like it's a really exciting time to be in fashion, and it's something I've always done since I was a kid, is sew clothing and make my own clothing. So.
How fascinating. What city do you live in, can I ask?
Yeah, right now I'm in Burnsville, New Jersey. So it's a great little town.
Oh.
It's the fashion capital
of the world?
Yeah. Well, coming soon, I'm looking actually moving into New York, because a lot of that is where the capital is. And I'm not that far. I'm probably about a 45-minute drive outside of New York City, but it's a beautiful area. It's known for its horse farms, and Trump has his golf course out here. So it's a very affluent area. It's very beautiful, very old country, I guess is the best word. So I like it. I've really enjoyed my stay here. So.
How wonderful. Well, it sounds beautiful. So tell me, Ms. Mila, how did you get into this line of work?
My father is an Amazon Indian, and he, I guess, was the first in his village where the Franciscans came in, and they kind of taught them everything, how to make shoes and clothing. And so my father is a very very adept at everything. He's actually a gardener. He was a gardener for many years on a private estate. When I was a little girl, I just always had a fascination with fabrics. I used to, when I was about, I guess a little over a year, and I was walking, my mother said, she used to get upset with me because I'd walk around throwing up women's dresses and feeling their petticoats and stuff, you know, like feeling their slips, you know, because I loved the feel of that. I was very tactile from an early age. And so my father, when I was about 7 or 8, I started sketching clothing. And then about 9 years old, my father taught me how to sew. And he just knew how to, like, how to sew a French buttonhole and blind stitch and all these sort of tailoring techniques that he grew up just as part of a survival skill, really. So he really gave me that foundation in sewing. And then from there, I just went on my own. I would take shirts and start to copy them and make my own patterns and start to make my own clothing. And it's something I always loved to do. I just, one of those things, you know, that it was always something like, oh, it's just a hobby. And that kind of artist mentality of, well, it's just a hobby, can't really make money from it, so I just make clothing for myself. But I had a different body type, too. You know, I was more broad-shouldered. I'm half Scottish. My mother's Scottish. So, you know, I got that Celtic broad shoulder. And then I had these long arms. And so I kind of made my own clothing out of necessity, too. I found it hard to find clothing that fit me right or looked right on me. So I was like, that's it. I'll make my own clothing.
I see. So let me back up just a little bit from this point. It's the little paragraph that you sent us, Mark and I, prior to the show about the different things you wanted to talk about. It said that before you got into the clothing industry, that you had an illustrious past life in the film industry, interior decoration, massage therapy, dance, yoga, and divination. Now, tell me about this. This sounds really like a lot of things for some one person to do in their life.
Yeah. Well, I think it was, I've always been someone that sort of just opened up to having new experiences. I never really attached myself. So I always wanted to do massage. So I just went to school, learned how to do massage, and I actually do a form of massage called Vedic Thai body work. So it's an Asian form of body work modality. It's really amazing. It's almost like a, feeling like you're on a, being stretched and pulled like taffy, and a little bit like lazy man yoga. So it's really beautiful. I just got it. It was just something I enjoyed doing. Dance came earlier on. I always loved to dance, even as a child. My mother and father, my father being Brazilian, all you know, knew all the Latin dances. And my mother actually in Scotland, they had things called ceilidhs. So I grew up always surrounded by dance. And I remember my first watching my first ballet was The Nutcracker with Mikhail Baryshnikov. And I wanted to learn how to dance. But, you know, my parents just didn't have the money to put me into dance school. So when I was in college, I was like, oh, I want to learn how to dance. So I took modern and ballet. And I ended up getting more like enjoying the choreography because I knew I just didn't have enough of the background and the foundation of the ballet. So, and then I just kind of was like, all right, well, that was fun. And then from there, I just went intuitive. The intuitive part of me was always, always there too. And I really started picking it up, I guess, about 10 years ago. I had a friend, Dino, who was a major influence in my life, especially opening me up spiritually and getting me into a lot of more mystic and esoteric teachings. He taught me, you know, Carlos Castanedas and how to work with the tarot. He knew astrology. He was also very much into scripture from more of that metaphysical standpoint, like the New Thought philosopher, sort of like Emmett Fox. So he had such a breadth of knowledge, and I worked with him and learned so much from him. And then from there, I just started to, and it was just like a fun thing. You know, friends would have a party, and they'd go, oh, why don't you come and do readings? So I was like, all right, I'll do some readings. And then I really got into I was really good at, you could give me a picture and I could look at the person's face, and then I would get information just from looking at a picture. And my girlfriends loved it because they would go on those online dating sites. I'm like, listen, you're like, can you check out the sky and see if it's worth it? You know? Like, what is it? It's like I could pre-screen for them, you know? So it was just, I know, it's something that I always just like, well, what's the next fun thing to do? But throughout that whole time, I always still was making my, you know, making my own clothing. And the film industry was sort of around that time when I was, after I met Dino. And Dino had a very short, brief life. And he knew it, too. He was so gifted and so intuitive. And I thought when he said he was leaving, like he was just going cross-country. But he died at a very young age. He was only 33, I think. So he died of of AIDS. So he had an, you know, HIV, and then he contracted AIDS and died. But he was a profound influence in my life. And he said he saw me doing my fashion, and he saw a marriage between, you know, fashion and film. So I opened up. I'm like, well, maybe I'll go and see about getting into film. And I went to a film event, and I just loved it. And I started just, I started interning at Lifetime Television, and then from there I just got involved with graduate student films. I just started to decide, I'm like, ooh, I want to learn what directing's like, and readings like. So I just had fun. And that's kind of the way I've lived my life. I'm sort of, I guess, like a bit of a Renaissance gypsy, maybe. You know?
I like it. And where does the divination come in?
Well, I guess like divination to me is the tarot and the intuitive, like using the cards. And sometimes too now, what I'm finding is I'll just get information. And Mark's had that experience where I just sit and I just start to get information about something. So sometimes it's almost like a spiritual Tourette's or something. Just kind of pour. I'm like pouring out this information, and Mark's like, "You're channeling." I'm like, "I'm channeling what? I don't know. Like, I don't even know it. I have no idea. Other people will notice it, and I don't realize it." But it's a funny thing because I'll get spot on for other people, and then I'll go for myself. I'm like, you know, it's that second guessing yourself. So I always have to seek counsel with other friends that have those gifts and talents that help me. So, but yeah, but that's kind of, I guess I've like worded it wrong. So I always thought divination to me was reading tarot and being able to decipher things out. And even when I'm doing the more intuitive readings, I feel like it's, I'm not that type where I'm saying, here's what's going to happen to you, or that predictive sort of intuitive. I'm more just, I feel like I'm a little spiritual Sherpa. And so it's like, all right, go this way, maybe try this thing. Because I had a friend that was a very good intuitive. And at any moment, you might be on that path, and then that next decision that you make alters the whole course of events that I just read. So it's really, there's room for growth and opportunity and play. So I really feel like that. I really do believe like Earth is a playground. So I'm always just finding ways that I can have fun. And it's a little interesting when people come up to you and say, so what do you do for a living? I'm like, well, my passion's my passion. It's like a really little rhyming phrase there, but it's true. I said, but then I have fun, like, doing massage, doing this, doing that. I'm like, oh. So it's not it's not that common denominator that, all right, I work at this job and blah, blah, blah. And, but that's just, it's, being able to just be comfortable. For me, it's been a process of just enjoying it. Like, I only get this one time to be on this planet, so I might as well, enjoy it and make the best of it.
Well, that's a lovely perspective. So tell me something. The spiritual creativity that you've built up to this point, how does that come through during your fashion work or through your fashion work?
Well, it's interesting because my whole I was just thinking about this before. Like, to me, the whole creative process is really a spiritual process. I mean, life's, I'm finding more and more for myself that every moment of every day is an act of God, if you will, or an act of creation. I'm, that co-create. I love that word, that co-creating. So when I'm on there, I'm really just, for me, I sometimes will sketch and then I go into prayer. I'm like, all right, Creator, just direct my hands and help me see designs that will look good on every woman or every man. And I'm actually starting to get into menswear. But I really do, I try to create pieces that I feel will have a sense of connection to the person's body and really accentuate the best of who they are. And I feel like for me, like that spirituality is about that. It's really a celebration of life and really feeling you're part of this incredible creative process of life. And so sometimes I'm on my dress form and it's the fabric has a life of its own, and I just ask the fabric to take me where it wants to take me. And so it's, again, like I have a, it's a consciousness and a connection when I'm in that creative process. And I think that's, I guess, perhaps typical maybe of the creative, of artists. And we're all creators, really. We're all artists, but I guess more the sort of societal idea of what an artist is. And when you, whenever I read artists, they just seem to almost talk in very sacred terms, but without being, having a spiritual overtone about it. And it really does, because it just takes you somewhere, and you have a direct experience and connection. And the clothing especially has that. So I'm really conscious about making sure that I don't create unless I really feel like I'm in this place. I have to sometimes ground, meditate, you know, get myself centered before I create, because the minute I start to draw or touch that fabric, like there's an energy involved in it. So I really try to put, like, you know, love. I put love into everything I do. So then when I'm wearing my clothing, people love my clothing. So it's like projecting that energy out. And I love seeing people just feel good, look good. I feel my clothing just is almost like a little, you know, it's like you got the dimmer switch, and I feel like my clothing kind of like brightens up your light a bit more.
Nice. I like that. I like your laugh, too. You have a really lovely, light perspective of life. And let's talk about that for a minute. How do you see the world?
How do I see the world? The first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is Mahatma Gandhi's become the change you wish to see in the world. So I'm someone that actually, I pretty much don't have television or radio, so how I see the world is basically how I step out in the world. So I always set my day. Like in the morning, I wake up and I write down in my journal how I'd like my day to go. I just act as if the day's already, like I just go into gratitude. Thank you for this great day, and I had such a great time, and I had so many great experiences, and oh my gosh, my breakfast was delicious. And I almost like prepave my day. And so when I step out in the world, I really just amazed at the Pollyanna, but I really just try my best and moment to moment to see the good in everyone and everything, and to move about in that day. Like, how can I be of service? And when I go to the grocery store and the woman at the cashier's there, I make an effort to be like, okay, thank you, you know, thank you, Jane, or whatever the name of that person is that's serving me. If they're helping me bad, I look at the tag. It's like making that connection to let know that they're appreciated, you know, that I see them. So that's really how I see the world. I'm sort of someone that when I start to hear a lot of the sort of quote-unquote strike and bad things that are happening in the world, I just, you know, there's free will. So I can add to that, or I can also see, well, you know, we don't know how this is all going to play out, and there's a divine plan, and everything turns out for the highest good. So I always just am in that affirmative sort of, I guess, affirmative prayer during my day. So that's kind of how I see the world. You know, so I don't know, like even that thing that happened in Colorado, and I still don't even know what it was, you know. It's just like, I don't know what major events go on. And I'm like, well, when did that happen? And it's not like I'm this kind of isolated person at all. It's like I'm so involved, but it's more on that, I guess to me it's that, like Jesus said of that, love your brother like yourself. So first, right, peace begins with me. I have to feel peace in my heart, love in my heart, and serenity in my heart, and trust in my own heart before I can go out the door and begin to feel that same way about someone else. And, you know, it's I love it. It's almost like every day I get to practice these spiritual, I guess, ideas, principles, thoughts into my daily life, and then watch my world change around me. You know, so because I can't control the greater events that happen in the world, but I can control my world and making my conscious part and adding to, you know, rather than focusing on the things and for me, I find when I focus on those things that are going on, the bigger pictures in the world, I'll sometimes ask, right, well, what is this going on in me? You know, like, where am I warring within myself, or where am I overflooding? You know, what's going on in me that I can maybe add on an energetic level to contributing to changing those circumstances? So kind of how that's like day in the life there.
that's really very wonderful.
Yeah.
But let me ask you about this no TV and radio. Do you not do the TV and radio thing because you would like to separate yourself a little bit from what's going on so it doesn't interpolate you or upset you in any way? Or is it a lack of interest? Or is it that you're so into creativity that takes the priority and you don't have time?
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit of a combination of all three. Sometimes when I go down and visit my parents, and they'll be watching TV, and I'm just more sensitive, I guess. I'll just be like, oh, this is too much, can't take it. And I feel there's a combination of I don't want to add to, you know, because you easily get sucked in. And then the second part is that I actually just will end up go to the library and end up renting TV or, you know, TV series or films. And then the other part is that I can also use it as a mind numbing and detract me from what I have to do in my day, because I can easily just avoid doing my work. I just be like, okay, let me watch some television, you know, or let me put a film on. And so I find that, like, it kind of forces me to really get focused. And I'm like, all right, what do you have to do? What do you have to do? And sometimes it's just be okay with being comfortable in silence. You know, I think the minute I step out my door, there's so much stimulus and attention going on that to just have those real quiet respite moments, it's almost more unnerving than mm-hmm. watching the 6 o'clock news, because the brain chatter in my head, God, you know, it's like, oh boy. So, you know, it's like I'm gonna be like, man, you think like what's going on in your bed coming to my neighborhood, my brain, you know, for escape routes out. So I feel like it does, like it brings that that focus of just being still, being okay with just being still with where I'm at, and then that allows me those times for that creative, those creative impulses to be more frequent too. So it's a bit of a threefold combination.
Okay, thank you for that. Tell me something about silence, because one thing that I have observed, people I know, people, you know, friends, family, that sort of thing, is that people are almost afraid of silence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They really are. Like, I think it was Elvis Presley had a television in every room. my family has a television in so many rooms of their house, and they're all on. Or whenever they're in that room, the television is on. Not that they're really watching anything, but that they're afraid of the silence.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with that. And it's interesting because having worked in the film and television industry, I absolutely have the greatest respect for that creative medium. It's a powerful tool. There are some great shows on, but I think it's like anything, there's a fine line between really enjoying it as that creative expression and then getting into just watching it as a way of numbing out and losing communication where people sit and watch TV. My parents will do that. They'll watch, for me, like they'll watch the news, you know, these hard-hitting news while they're eating television. And I literally have to wait till they're done and sometimes go into another room because, I'm like, I'm sensitive. I'm like, I don't want that negative energy, like, coming out of my food, you know. So I like to leave the room. But it's that whole thing of, you know, just to turn off the TV and to be comfortable even in that place of eating silence. Like, we're always filling the space with talk, filling the space with film, filling the space with TV, filling the space with noise, talking on the phone, texting, chat, and to just, like, not do, just be, just sit there and be comfortable. Absolutely, I do. I feel it is. I had to learn how to start being comfortable being with that silence, because it's just, it is, it's like, for me, sometimes it feels like, oh, okay, what's next? You know, you feel like, all right, I should be doing something. I should be doing, those shoulds come in. I should be doing something. I shouldn't be just sitting here. I shouldn't just be having this silent space. Something's got to fill it, you know, where those are the moments, I think, where time really stretches and open up, and all these opportunities to have dialogue with yourself and then connect with God, the creator, the universe, whatever you want to call it. That's my kind of like TV connection right there, because that power source is like the most, it's just, that is my life source. That is my power source. So I've got to learn how to connect to that.
Well, that's wonderful. Mark, could you interject for just a minute? And it's 10 o'clock. So
sure. Yeah, so we're going to do a little commercial break there, since we're talking about TV and everything. So you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. You can find out more about this show and other shows at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Any of the shows that you're listening to are available in the archives. So if you go to the website, you'll see the link that got you to listen to the show. And then from that, you can actually see all the previous shows. And you can go back and play those when you want. Hey, Pam, why don't you go ahead and talk about your radio shows and what you've been up to with all the new shows these days?
Oh, thanks, Mark. Aside from doing the Spiritual Connection show with Mark, I have a station called Pamela Latour Radio, and we've got many different shows happening all the time. So you can go to PamelaLatour.com or PamelaLatourRadio.com and check out all the different shows that are happening. We've got a show called Soul Traveler, which is the journey. It's with a hypnotherapist, Patricia McGivern, and myself, the soul's journey through lifetime after lifetime. We have every Thursday morning at 9 o'clock, Dr. Kelly Brady and I do a show called Insights and Umbrellas. It's sort of an intersection between psychotherapy, psychology, ancient medicine, and quantum physics and metaphysics. And we look at current events, we look at what's happening in our lives right now, and she gives her perspective as a doctor, and I give my perspective, and we do a lot of laughing, and it's great fun. And there's so much more on there. I won't go into any more detail because I want to go back to this lovely lady we have with us, but you can always reach me through PamelaLatourRadio.com. Luz Mila, do you want to go ahead and give us your website?
My website is McColl&Clan.com.
Excellent. Oh, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up, Pam. Can you give out your website?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, my website is PamelaLatour.com.
Yeah, you just taught a workshop down in Florida. What was it, last week?
Yeah, last Saturday, on the power to change reality. Turns out great.
Excellent. Yeah, I originally met Pam through some mutual friends and studied under Pam for a little bit, and just absolutely an incredible teacher. Is your program going to be available for download for people who weren't able to attend the class?
It'll be available not in audio, but in or not in visual, but audio. So you'll be able to listen to it.
And they can find out more information on your regular website for that.
Right. I don't think it's downloaded yet, but it will be soon. But I'll put some information up there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So,
okay.
Latima, you were talking about, you know, the nature of, like, your development and how things had unfolded, how you were playing with material and stuff like that at a very young age. When do you think your spiritual side first manifested?
Wow. I would probably say a little before I met Dino, so maybe like 96. My first one was when I was in college and I met she was actually a neighbor, and she was an intuitive, and I kind of connected with her, and she, ironically, I was having this medical issues, and she suggested going to a Colin hygienist or whatever, and then from there, that Colin hygienist connected me with another woman, Kathleen Quinn, who is, she does gestalt, but she also does more like spiritual therapy. And so I started to do that. And then from there, that's when I met Dino. So it was probably like 96 when I started to open up to it. But even prior to that, when I think about, like what Pam was talking about with like the quantum physics, I always had such a fascination with that kind of side of science. And one of the first books that really opened me, I think, was Art and Physics by Leonard Schlein. And then from there, I read the Tao of Physics. And then before you know it, I started to read like a lot of the quantum physics books. And then I started to open up to like Louise Hay and Shakti Gawain. So it was all at the same time. It was just, it was really incredible. Like something in me just kind of said, there's got to be something more to this. And it's just sort of like almost, you just get guided to it. So I would say around there, like 96, I started, you know, really began that path.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I know you were talking earlier about your father and you kind of classified him as Amazonian. You know,
yes, he is.
Is he got that characteristic? I mean, you almost think of something like Amazonian as being, you know, almost like a shaman or anything like that. Do you consider him to be very spiritual? And
he, you know, it's interesting. When I think about it, he definitely has that that indigenous view of life, and it's very ironic because my mom from Scotland had more of that traditional Catholic. Very strict Catholic upbringing. And my father was very much a man of nature. And I remember being a kid and he always taught us about that cycle of nature. So he's a gardener and he taught about how you love the plants. And when you love the plants, they grow. You know, you treat everything. It's a life still. And I remember he talked about, like, he was like an organic gardener before organic gardening was even around. Like he never used any chemicals or anything because he allowed nature to have its process. Like the worm comes up, the bird takes it, you know, those little beetles that feed on this have it. Like he just knew that interconnectedness naturally, you know, it was just part of his growing up. And I remember him talking about even in the Amazon where he lived, he said there were sections that none of the Indians would enter because they understood that this was their part that nature allowed them to have and that nature had hers and they didn't touch it. You know, that was her sex. So it was wild that they had these sort of sacred boundaries of the idea that nature says you can have this, but this you don't touch, and they didn't touch it. Like no one would go into certain sections because it was nature. It was like sacred. You know, so it was really interesting. So I grew up with that that kind of undercurrent in my life. And of course, being a child where I grew up, my parents were servants on the state. I was like, you know, it wasn't the exactly popular parent to have. So, you know, now I'm like, wow, Dad was awesome, man. it's like now it's a gift. It's that, it's, and that's that whole thing. It's like everything has a divine, you know, we all are divine, and we all have incredible purpose on this planet, each and every single one of us, you know, has a gift to give the world to share. And it's, for me, I just had to sort of have that wounded spiritual warrior kind of pathway in my early upbringing, but I'm so grateful for it now. Like, wow, I grew up with this father that was an Amazon Indian, and my mom being Scottish. When we go back to Scotland to visit family, the Scots, I think, are just naturally sort of into more of the mystical. You know, there's a thing called, if you're crazy, I'll say, "Uck, you're away with the fairies." They were very much, you know, and I even have a mug that says that, it's like "away with the fairies." You know, I remember going to visit my grandmother, and that was like the threat: "You better not go out late at night; the fairies are going to get you." I was like, "Oh my god!" You know, so it was, and it was always like, you know, that tongue in cheek. So it's interesting. Like you grew up, and the Scots are great with those tales like that. So I kind of had it as an undercurrent in my life. I just never appreciated it or really understood it because it's just part of my life. You know, it was that sort of almost like taking it for granted. I'm like, well, you know, my dad's an Amazon Indian, but having that as a father, when I was young, it was not the cool thing, you know.
It's like, what's your father do for a living, you know, when you would bring him to school, you know?
yeah, totally, yeah, he was, and a lot of times, when I was young, I had a very thick Scottish accent, because my parents, you know, of course, we grew up on an estate, so we were a bit secluded, because you're on 40 acres of land, and it was beautiful, it was absolutely a beautiful way to grow up, but I really just had my sisters and my mother about. So when I went to school, I had a thick Scottish accent, and they had never heard something like that before. And they put me into speech therapy classes because they thought there was something wrong with the way I talked. Yeah, so I mean, thought, like, wait, what's wrong with me? I sound okay. You know? And it's just interesting because they've never really had this, you know, back then it was like there wasn't really any Scots about, so they just thought, like, wow, this kid's got like some kind of speech pathology. Now I kind of wish like I had it.
I want that famous fashion designer.
I know.
So tell me a little bit about you know, Dino and what Dino's background was.
Dino came into my life for a short period of time, but he, like I said, he had a profound impact. And his background is as diverse as mine, except he was really, from a very early age, he said, he was just always in, I remember him saying, like, he was like 8 or 9, and he knew about the chakras, and he would wear certain colors to school to project and heal certain chakras. And he said by the time he was like 13, 14, he was studying all of astrology and getting into that. And then, you know, he grew up in the South, so he had sort of that traditional Christian upbringing, and he got into scripture, reading the Gnostic Bibles, and he just started to really get into all these different mystical paths. And when he came to New York, he made his living as a tarot reader, and I remember him saying, I guess it used to be on 42nd Street before it got Disney-fied, that there was this, I guess, this like spiritual center there where it was like a tea room where you could come in and get tarot readings, and he worked there for a while. And then from there, he just got really very well known for, I mean, he was, when he gave me a reading, this is like 10 years ago, and I remember him telling me at the time, you're not going to understand any of this right now, but you will someday. And so every year I'd look at it, I'm like, oh, this is happening, this is happening. And now, like, here it is 10 years later, and the things that he had told me are beginning to happen in my life. And so when I met him, I got a reading from him, and I was just so intrigued by his knowledge and just his spirituality. When Dino walked in, he just beamed, and he had such a confidence. And it wasn't this ego, you know, this sort of like, I'm great. It was just that he was so almost like that Christ consciousness, and he was so just in touch with the divine and just knew that, you know, he was this, that his life was precious, and you know, that he had this gift. So he was humble about it, but he was a powerhouse too. And I remember just sitting there, I'm like, I'd love to learn what you're doing. And he said, all right, we'll meet once a week, and I'll begin to teach you what I know. But I remember he's like, I'll tell you this, though, that once you open up this, you cannot go back because you will die. And I was like, what do you mean, I'll die? Like, you know? But I understand. It's like spiritual death. Like, once you open up and you begin to say, really explore that deeper connection to yourself and to what I'll call God, you can't go back. It's painful. It's painful to try to just live on a life based with that small self ego. And that's normally what happens for me. If my life is not going the way I want, or things aren't working out, it's because it's that I that's taking over, rather than sort of humbling myself and saying, all right, spirit, you know, what are you, help me with this, like, let this go, and what do you want me, what's my next step, like, what am I supposed to be doing next? And then when I do that, my day pretty much works out really nice, and I get, like, a ton of surprises, and he taught me that, like, so now I know, like, I can't go back, like, there's no other recourse for me to go, but to step, go forward, and going forward means really constantly the clearing out. He would say, you know, keep your intent clean and clear. So when you set an original intention, whether it's like for me, I'd like to live in New York, like I want to move into New York. So if I set that intention and then I just then, you know, go on my way and not being clean and clear about it, the universe will bring me back, and it's pain to get clean and clear about what that intent was. So he was big on this the four agreements, and sort of Carlos Castaneda's was a lot about that, you know, being impeccable with my word. And he always said, be aware. And the big one he said was pay attention, Lucmila. Because I'm a Libra too, so I'm a great one. Like, oh, look at the bird. Oh, you I'm like one of them, like a dog, you know, before I know it, I'm going here, going there. So I keep his words with me, like, this means, like, pay attention, you know. And he would always say, do your work. And I always thought when he meant work was, like, the stereotypical idea of work, like, I've got to work 9 to 5 or work all these hard, work. And I really understand that the real work he was talking about was that inner work, that spiritual work. So for me, I'm like, as long as I do that foundation of cleaning and clearing out that channel, then I'm able to easily do my work. My day becomes easy and effortless, and creativity flows. Ideas come. Good things just fall into my lap. But I have to do that work. And to me, that is the real work. And he would say that, do what you love and the money will come. Do what you love and everything works out. And it's that, I find it's like, all right, well, I'm doing what I love. Where's the money? Where's this? Where's that? And it really is. It's like that trust, that absolute faith and trust. And he would say that. He said, do not doubt. He said, believe, and then you will see. And he just had a lot of those one-liners that always stuck with me. And to this day, like, when I'm caught in that small sort of self, I'll remember that, like, Lucmila, pay attention, do your work, you know, just relax, breathe, be aware. He would say that, breathe, you know, focus on your breathing, know, so, but he'd always say unbending intent, like intent is the force behind everything. So I'm really learning to be more as like that, the four agreements, like being more impeccable, and not just with my words, but with my actions. So.
Just some really powerful teachings and everything. What did you notice about him as far as how he would balance between the spirituality and his religious upbringing?
He seemed to have like more at a very young age, even a more spiritual knowledge about religion than the sort of, rules and practices. He always said to me that Jesus was the Christ, and the Christ was a consciousness. And he always would refer to the Bible of things that Jesus said, like, you know, this too you shall have and more. You know, and that he said he always said the big key is, Lusmila, love your brother. He said, love your brother, love your brother. He said, you have to love your brother. And the other big thing he would say is, let go of all self-importance. And it's interesting because for me at that time, I was like wallowing in self-pity. So I thought, like, what is he talking about? I don't think I'm important. But, you know, when you're thinking about yourself all the time, you're pretty much thinking you're important, you know, whether it's good or bad. You know? But he really taught I remember he used to have me read Psalms. He said, memorize a psalm and just learn, pick a psalm that resonates with you and memorize it and sing it from your heart. And so he just did it, I think, as exercises for me to break from that old paradigm and thought of, you know, this God being this bearded guy in the sky and religion being, opened me up to really seeing the incredible metaphysics and spirituality in the Bible, and rereading it now again, it's just incredible how it just all, it really is an interconnectedness and intertwined, and he just saw it at such an early age and just passed that on. And he broke down my stigmas and my rigid thinking about it and opened me up to these new experiences. And I'm forever grateful for them.
Mark, can I jump in here for a minute? I'd like to talk to you about your clothes because we don't have that much longer left. And you mentioned something earlier. You said, wear your world. And I thought, what an amazing tagline. So pretty. Can you tell me what your clothes are like? What you would say the type of clothes are? I know you mentioned organic earlier. I'd like to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's my clothing, it's for me, it's I always think of Coco Chanel. You know, it's just like this, it's really what I call style ROI. So it's style with a return on investment. And my pieces, like some pieces I have, I made 6 years ago, and when I wear them out, people still stop me on the street and say, where did you get that jacket? Where did you get that coat? And I feel like that is it. Like when I create my pieces, I want them to retain their style and their modernity, is that the word? You know, like their modernism. And but still be able to hold the quality. So my pieces are, they're very ultra, for me, I feel they're very feminine. They're gorgeous. They really have soft edging. They just contour. I'm very into just simple lines. I don't like a lot of adornment on my pieces. It's almost just like the clothing just accentuates the female form. And the beautiful thing with my clothing is I've seen a jacket be on a professional model and then be on someone that's 20-something and then be on someone that's 60-something, and it still looks incredible. And to me, like, that's what I love. Like, it really carries across the board because it's just great style. I feel nowadays we're in such a throwaway fashion. I remember growing up, you know, you would have the layaways, where you would save up. And in Japan, they do that. Like, they will save up to get that Gucci Prada original bag, and they will have it for 10 years. So I feel like there's, for me, my goal is a designer to bring that back. Like, people are like, oh, I probably can't afford your clothing. I said, yeah, but that one piece, you'll be able to have it for 6 years rather than buying, you know, these things that you're going to throw away, add to the landfills. Why not buy a few great staple pieces like a Chanel suit, right? People have a Chanel suit. They've got it for their life. So I'm really more about that. And that's what I feel my clothing just, it really is. It just, even when I do my menswear, I'm like, when I make my pieces for the men, I think to myself, like, what would I want my man to wear? You know, how good do I want him to look? And I want, so when I'm creating my pieces and having that thing of how much more can I accentuate being a woman and really bringing out those qualities. So I'm very attentive. It might be just like a button that I add, or just the way I do a certain cuff that just adds a little different edge to it just being a plain swing coat. So I love that. Like, I grew up watching, my mother was really into all the old films from the 30s and 40s, and I love that elegance and that glamour, and, you know, the women just radiated beauty and style, and I love that. So I try to bring that out in my clothing. So, and they are, I always, people say, oh, your stuff's so, it's beautiful. It's not the couture, these theatrical pieces, though those are fun. It really is meant to be something that a woman, or like the men, can wear and know and have the confidence that they could pull that jacket out in a couple of years and it'll still be as fresh and as innovative and as stylish and as beautiful as it was when they first put it on. Like, that's what I concentrate when I'm creating my clothing and my design. So how can I really bring out the best and have that best stay and carry through?
Wow, that's incredible. So
that is.
Thank you for sharing that and everything. If you could go ahead and give out your website again so everybody knows where to go and find out more about you and your work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. It's at www.mccoleandclan.com.
And as always, Pam, it's great to have you on and to hear you on the show and everything. So thank you for being here.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Mark, and I've really enjoyed the show. Thank you, Lucinda.
Oh, thank you both for having me. It's been such a pleasure, a blessing, and a gift. I'm truly honored, so thank you so much.
All right, everybody.
You're
good night, and you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio.
Good night.